All right, good morning, Rabbi. So let's begin. Actually, Mem Hei Amud Beis, three lines up from the bottom. I know he stopped a little bit later yesterday, but let's just pick up here. Time am I? So the Gemara was speaking about the topic of the menorah. So the Gemara says, why is it that the menorah is not permitted to... When they say menorah, they don't mean like the Beis HaMikdash menorah, what I guess we'd call today a candelabra. So why is it that the menorah can't be moved? So the Gemara said, Rabba and Rav Yosef, Rabba and Rav Yosef both said, Ho'il va'adam koveya la'makom. Because since a person designates a particular place for the menorah, therefore, by definition, that renders it unmovable for the duration of Shabbos. Amar le Abaye Rav Yosef, so Abaye counters, and he says, one second, V'hari kilas chasanin. What about a bridal canopy? Right, so we'll discuss this in greater depth in just a moment, but the bridal canopy is a canopy that goes over a bed. So what about the kilas chasanin? The adam koveh lamakum, that a person establishes a place for that particular canopy. V'amar Shmuel mishum Rabbi Chiya, and yet Shmuel said the name of Rabbi Chiya, kilas chasanin, top of Mem Vav. Kilas chasanim mutter lintosa umutter lefarka b'shabbes. That when you have a kilas chasanim, you are permitted to go ahead and spread it out, and you are also permitted to take it down. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. Now what's interesting is, even before the muktzah issue, what automatically comes to mind is the bona issue, is the fact that, let's say, putting it up or taking it down should be an issue of binyan. Leaving aside, is there binyan, is there bona by kalim? We'll discuss that in greater depth later on. Thank you. But look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, Mutar lintosa, top Rashi mem vav medalit, this tam kilas chasanim ein lagag tefach. Because a regular bridal canopy does not have a roof of a tefach. Rabbi says, in order to be chayiv for bona, in order to be bona structure, you have to build a structure that has walls and has a roof, at least a tefach. Now a tefach has to have a roof that's at least one tefach straight. So what's interesting about the bridal canopy is like a tent. And the idea is, it comes more to a point, it doesn't have a tefach of a roof. So because of that, says the Gemara, the Gemara just gives the instructions over here, Shenachlitin yotzin l'shnei rashi harita, Shenachlitin yotzin l'shnei rashi hamita be'emsa, echad l'kan, ve'echad l'kan, v'nosin klunsoos mizeh u'mizeh, u'mashlich ha'ohel aleha, v'hu shafeya l'kan u'lekan. So you put two posts in the middle of the bed, one on each side, right? One, let's say, by the head of the bed, one by the foot of the bed, but not like when we think about a canopy, we normally think about four poles. This is not four poles, this is two poles, right? Two poles, one at the head of the bed, one at the feet of the bed, in the middle of the bed, and you go ahead and you put the canopy over it. So it's like a tent over the bed. And the idea is, because there is not a tefach of a roof, therefore there's no issue of building, or for that matter, deconstructing, demolition when you take it down. So we're not worried about the binyan right now. What we're worried about is the fact that the Mishnah says that you can go ahead and take it down on Shabbos, which is interesting, because Abaye says to Rav Yosef, according to the logic you just espoused before, that whenever you are miyached makom, whenever you designate something to be in a particular space, that renders it immovable for the duration of Shabbos, using that logic, one should not be permitted to what? To move the bridal canopy. Because the assumption is that when you put it up, you are miyachid l'mokum. You set it aside to be in that particular space, and therefore it should be immovable. So the Gemara says, Amar Ella Amar Abaye, Sef Abaye says, there's a different issue with the menorah. What's the issue? Bishal chulios. We are dealing with a menorah made of pieces. Chulios means pieces. Chulios literally means rings. It means the menorah made of multiple pieces. Look at Rashi. Bishal chulios. The menorah shall prakim. We're talking about a menorah made of pieces. And the issue is, Shema tipol v'tisparek v'yachzirena v'nimtza osakli. What's the concern? The concern is that if you move that menorah, it may fall, break apart, and you will put it back together. Now, the act of putting it back together is problematic on Shabbos. Now, we'll say again, we'll get into the discussion, because it is a machlokas. Is there binyan by kelim? Is there such a thing as building by utensils, or is building just limited to structure? So we'll discuss that. But right now, whether it's binyan, whether it's makim, abadish, whatever it is, it's problematic to put a broken kli back together on Shabbos. Therefore, Abaye says, the reason why the menorah is muktza, the reason why the menorah, and you can't move it, is because we're dealing with the menorah that is made out of pieces, and if we allow you to move, we're afraid it's going to fall, or you're going to fall, it's going to break, you're going to put it back together. So the Gemara says the following. If that's the case, Ihachi, nighttime with the Reb Shimon ben Lakish to Shari. If that's the case, then why does Reb Shimon ben Lakish allow you to move it on Shabbos, right? If that should seem a pretty strong reason not to move it according to everybody. Why does Reb Shimon ben Lakish allow you to move it? To which the Gemara answers, my chulios, kein chulios. So the Gemara says, oh, because what's the case? It doesn't have to be literally a menorah of pieces, but rather a menorah that it's like of pieces. What does that mean? Di'is ba'chidki. It has grooves. Rabbi said, what's the issue over here? Take a look at Rashi. Chidki, chituchin savivla. I don't know what that word is. V'dome leprakim, oman dechazi savar shal prakim hu. Suppose here's what's interesting. According to Rishim Melakish, the Braisa is dealing with the following case. Of a menorah that's not literally made of pieces, but rot, a menorah that has grooves. When the menorah has grooves, it looks like it's made of pieces. And therefore there's a concern that what? That if somebody sees me moving this menorah, they will automatically assume, what kind of menorah is it? A menorah made of pieces. They'll assume you could move that menorah, and they may come to move an actual menorah pieces. Therefore, the Braisa says, you may not move this grooved menorah. So the Gemara says, okay, let's put this all together. So apparently, Reb Shimon ben Lakish disagrees with this particular concern. So now the Gemara brings all of this information together and gives us a cohesive, we'll call it a cohesive conclusion. So therefore the Gemara says like this. Hilchach, therefore, four lines down from the top, Mevav Mudalef. Hilchach, Chulios, if you have a menorah that is made of pieces, Bein Gedola, Bein Ketana, Asur L'Taltala. Whether it is a large menorah or a small menorah, you may not move it on Shabbos. That's if it's actually made of pieces. Because then again, Rabbi said the concern is what? The menorah may fall, may break apart, you'll put it back together, asur on Shabbos. Gedola, if you have a large menorah, nami di isba chidki, gezeira atu gedola de chulios. If you have a large menorah, then what? Then even if it's not actually made of pieces, but what? It's grooved. So it looks like it's made of pieces. You may also not go ahead and move that on Shabbos. Why? Because people may think that it is a menorah made of pieces and may come to carry a menorah made of pieces. So we'll say, the reason why the Gemara singles out Gedola, if you look at Rashi, is Rashi's Gedola, Hoyel V'darka La'asosa Shel Chulios. Because ultimately, it was the custom to make a large menorah out of pieces. That was common. So when people would see the grooves, they would automatically assume that it is a menorah made up of multiple pieces. And therefore, you can't carry that menorah that's grooved, lest you come to carry an actual menorah that is made of pieces. Kipli, so when is there the machlokes? Biketana de isbachidki. The machlokes exists in a small menorah that has grooves. Mar savar gazvinan. One opinion holds that with the gzera is in effect. Meaning, so one holds that even with a small menorah, that halacha lemaisa, one is concerned that a small menorah with grooves, one may come to us, confuse that menorah with the menorah made of pieces, and if we allow you to carry that menorah, you may come to carry a menorah made of pieces, which is problematic. Umar, some of the other opinion holds, lo gazvinan, the other opinion holds, no, since everyone knows that what? That in general, small menorahs were not made of pieces. Small menorahs are usually made of one piece of metal, and the grooves that are there must just be grooves and not pieces. One will not come to confuse a small menorah with grooves with a large menorah made of pieces. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Daiter." Correct. So the Gemara says, Did Rabbi Yochanan actually say this? So the Gemara says the following. Look at Rashi. Did Rabbi Yochanan actually say that the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda? Now, also remember, Rabbi Yehuda, the fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. There is a fundamental machlokes in Muktzah in general, but more specifically, what the Gemara is focusing on over here is the Ben Hashmashos piece. According to Rabbi Yehuda, once something has been Muktzah Ben Hashmashos, Miga des Katzoi Ben Hashmashos, is Katzoi de Kuli Shabbos. Meaning, once it's been Muktzah for Ben Hashmashos, it's Muktzah for the whole Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon does not hold to that idea. Rabbi Shimon holds that for certain items, let's say a nair, the only time it's actually Muktzah is when? When the nair is burning. But once the nair goes out, the item itself is no longer muktzah. So the Gemara says the following. So does Rabbi Yochanan really pledge his allegiance to Rabbi Yehuda and hold that once the item is muktzah ben hashmashos, it remains muktzah throughout Shabbos? V'amar Rabbi Yochanan. So I will say now, the Gemara quotes the Braisa that we saw on Friday. It's a chazara. we saw on Friday. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, halacha kistam mishnah. So Rabbi Yochanan says, well, we didn't record in just a moment, right? The halacha only follows the stam mishnah. I'll say what that means is, there are some mishnayos that are attributed to a particular opinion, and there are some mishnayos that just state facts and don't quote a particular opinion. So Rabbi Yochanan is of the opinion that a stam mishnah is authoritative. Why? Because if the statement of the mishnah is not being attributed to a particular opinion, what does that usually mean? That everyone holds of it, right? It means that it has some level of consensus. So if Rabbi Yochanan says, if you have a stam mishnah, the halacha follows a stam mishnah. Okay, so why is that important for us? So the Gemara says the following. Utnan, we quote the following mishnah, which we had earlier. Muchni shalom, if you have a wagon that has a wheel, bizman shehi nishmetis, remember this, right? When the wheel is detachable. So the wheel is not permanently affixed to the wagon, but you're able to remove the wheel. So the halacha is ein chibur la. Therefore, the wheel is not considered to be part of the wagon. What's the ramifications of that? Ve'ein nimdedes ima. So let's say, remember, as we pointed out before, if you have an item that's over a certain size, it loses its status as a kli, which means that it's no longer makabel tumah. So if the wheel is detachable from the wagon, it doesn't count as part of the greater measurement of the wagon to allow it to leave the designation of a kli and to become free from makabel tumah. Ve'imatzeles ima ba'ohel ames. Similarly, if the wheel is detachable, it does not contribute towards the size of the wagon to allow the wagon to become a receptacle that's capable of being a barrier to tuma. Meaning, if the wagon is a certain size, then if the wagon, let's say, were to pass over a grave, it would shield the people in the wagon from being makabel tuma. If the wheel is detachable, the wheel does not contribute towards the greater size of the wagon. So those are second. That's not our point. Here's what's important for us. Actually, it's not important yet. I mean, it is important, but it's not important for this conversation yet. Ve'en gorin osa, ve'en gorin osa b'shabbos bizman shi'isha lehamalos. And similarly, you may not go ahead and drag the wheel, right, at a time where they're on Shabbos, where there's money on the wheel. Ha'en mos, but the inference from that is what? That if there's no money on the wheel, sharia, it's permitted, ve'af agav dehavu alei ben hashmashos. And even though what the inference from the Rabosa is what? When can't you move the wheel? When the money is actually on it. But the inference from that is what? If the money's not on it, then you can. And that seems to be even so of what? Even if the money was on it, ben hashmashos, but is no longer on it now. So also now here we have the contradiction. Because we just said before that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds that if muktzah was on an object, ben hashmashos, then that item become muktzah for the entire Shabbos. Now Rabbi Yochanan also, so now we have Rabbi Yochanan telling us that the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda. We also have another thing in Rabbi Yochanan that says the halacha always follows a stam mishnah. Where here you have a stam mishnah that says what, or that seems to imply what? That the only time that the item is going to be immovable is when the muktzah item is actually on it. But if the muktzah item is not on it, even if it was there all ben hashmashos, as long as it's not there now, the item is what? The item is movable. So which one is it? So the Gemara says, no. Amar Rabbi Zeira, Tehei Mishnah Seinu, Shelo Hayu Aleha Ma'oz Kol Ben Hashmashos, Shelo Lishbar Dvarav Shal Rabbi Yochanan. So it says, very interesting formulation. So Rabbi Zeira says, no. You have to interpret the Mishnah as dealing with a case where the money was on it all Ben Hashmashos. And that's why, again, that's what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah means to say that if there's money on it, meaning if there was money on it, ben hashmashos, then you may not go ahead and drag the wheel, even if what? Even if the money is no longer on that throughout the rest of Shabbos. And in this sense, the Mishnah is absolutely reconciled with the position of Rabbi Yochanan, who holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay? Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says the following. Pam achos. Thank you. Pam achos. Holoch Rebbe Lidiuspira. So it says, it's actually interesting. It says, one time Rebbe went to Diuspira. So the truth is, Rashi says Diuspira is a makom. But Diuspira sounds very much like diaspora. But yet Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi does say that Diuspira is the name of a place. Okay. So he went to Diuspira. Chances are Diuspira is in Chutz La'aretz. Right? So he went to Diuspira. Vahora, now listen to this. Vahora b'minora ki Rabbi Shimon b'ner. I'm going to say, follow this wording. And he ruled concerning the menorah in accordance with Rabbi Shimon in the Ner. So the Gemara says, Ibailuhu, what does that mean? Ibailuhu, hora b'menorah k'Rabbi Shimon b'ner lehetera. So on one hand, what it can mean is, does it mean that he paskin, essentially, he took the position of Rabbi Shimon by Ner and applied it to menorah. What does Rabbi Shimon hold by the Ner? That as soon as the Ner goes out, as soon as the fire goes out, you're permitted to go ahead and carry the Ner. So are we saying that Rebbe went ahead and therefore paskin the same way by the menorah? That once the menorah goes out, you're permitted to carry it also? O Dilma, or perhaps, Hora b'menorah li'isura, u'k'Rabbi Shimon b'ner lehetera. Or maybe it means that no, that's what Rebbe did was, he paskined with the menorah that it's aser. That with the menorah, you may not go ahead and carry the menorah even after what? Even after the flame goes out, and that would be for the reasons that we mentioned before. But when it came to Stam and Ner, there he paskened like Rabbi Shimon, that once the candle, once the flame went out, you'd be permitted to go ahead and carry it. To which the Gemara answers, Teku. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know really what actually happened in the Yusperah and how Rabbi paskened. Okay? Rav Malkia ikla lebei Rabbi Smaloi. Rav Malkia went to the house of Rabbi Smaloi. V'tiltal shraga, and he carried a candle. Now Rashi says, tiltal shraga, ner shekava. So apparently Rav Malkia, paskin like Rabbi Shimon, he went to the house of Rabbi Smaloi, and he paskin like Rabbi Shimon, he carried the ner after it extinguished, v'ikpid Rabbi Smaloi, and Rabbi Smaloi got upset. Okay, next one. And also you're going to see there's a series of these stories just to show that this machlok is between Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon trickled down. Trickled all the way down the generations.
No fistfights.
No fistfights. Baruch Hashem. So the Gemara is the following: Rabbi Yosi Galila, ikla la asrei, de Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Yosi from the Galil went to the city of Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina. Tiltal shraga, and Rabbi Yosi Galila, Rabbi Yosi from the Galil carried a candle after it was extinguished. The ikpit Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina, and Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina got upset. Rabbi Avo. Ki ikla la asrei Rabbi Yoshua Levi. This is interesting. Rabbi Avo, when he went to the city of Rabbi Yoshua Levi, have a metaltal shraga, he would carry a candle after it was extinguished. Ki ikla la asrei Rabbi Yochanan, lo have a metaltal shraga. But yet, when he went to visit Rabbi Yochanan, he wouldn't carry the candle after it was extinguished. So what's going on here? Marashach. Ik Rabbi Yehuda sira leili avik Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, so what happens? So we see over here, we see Rabbi Avo, pick a side. If you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, then never carry the candle, even after it's extinguished. If you hold like Rabbi Shimon, then you can carry the candle. To which the Gemara says, no. In reality, Rabbi Avo held like Rabbi Shimon. And Haloch Lamaisa held that as soon as the flame goes out, you should be permitted to go ahead and carry the candle. So what happened? Umishum kvoda de Rabbi Yochanan hu de lo avid. But he also knew that Rabbi Yochanan paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. So out of covet to Rabbi Yochanan, he did not carry the candle when he was in his presence. It was an incredible yisod here, that in general, one always has to respect the halachic sensitivities of wherever they are. A person is permitted to have the shitos. You can have your own personal shitos. You can do whatever you want. But when you are somewhere else, you must exhibit the proper cover to the halachic sensitivities of the other individual. Of course, assuming they're legitimate halachic sensitivities.
Rabbi Yochanan was a Rosh Yeshiva of
I think he was in Surah. He was a Rosh Yeshiva. That's why, by the way, anytime, just Stephen saying a good point over here, anytime in general you see someone ruling in on one of these major machloksim, generally they're a person of stature. So the fact that Rabbi Yochanan goes ahead and puts his gloves in the ring?
Hat in the ring, right?
Puts his shrimal in the ring, right? To go ahead and, get involved in the machlokis between Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda indicates that he was a person of stature. Okay, so the point...
And we already had it, that it's granted the halacha was set in one area, but when they went into the other area, they was in Brachos, it was cursed. Why? Because he was in that area.
Right, right. Correct.
Sorry.
Correct.
I'm wasting time.
Correct, correct, correct. So we'll say, so over here, Rabbi Avol really paskin like Rabbi Shimon, but because when he was in Rabbi Yochanan's locale, he had respect for Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. So Gemara says the following: Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Shraga de Mishcha Shari Letaltula. So Rabbi Yehuda says like this: if you have a candle, an oil candle, you are permitted to go ahead and carry it. Again, Rashi points out, although he keeps on clarifying this, Acher Shekava Kreb Shimon de Lo Mois. So this is talking about after the candle is extinguished. So now after the candle is extinguished, Rabbi Yehuda says that you're permitted to go ahead and carry an oil candle. Now, an oil candle, Rashi points out, is delo mois. Apparently, it doesn't become moth, doesn't become disgusting. However, the naphtha, asr letaltula. But a naphtha candle, which does become disgusting after it's been burned, after it's been kindled, you're not permitted to carry. Rabba of Rav Yosef to Amri Tarvaihu, the naphtha nami shamri letaltula. So Rabba and Rav Yosef both hold that even a naphtha candle, after it goes out, you're permitted to carry it. Why? We'll read the parentheses in this case. Dehoil v'chazi l'chassos be'mana. Because since it can be used as a covering for a utensil. So here's what's interesting. That although again, you don't really have another use for the kli itself and its primary designation, because you're not going to kindle a candle on Shabbos. You can't do that. But essentially, the Gemara is saying is it is usable as a bottle stopper, right? You could use it to go ahead and be as a bottle stopper for a kli. So the Gemara says the following: Rav Avya ikla lebe Rava. Well, this is an interesting story. So Rav Avya went to the house of Rava. Hava mi'isan be kare betina. So right, Rav Avi went to the house of Rava, and his shoes were dirty with mud. His shoes were dirty. You'll see why this is important in just a moment. So Rav Avi walked into the house with muddy shoes. Asive apurya kame dirava. And not only that, but what did he do? He put his feet up on Rava's couch. Okay? He put his feet up on Rava's couch. Okay? So asive apurya kame dirava. Ikbid Rava. Rava got very angry. Rava got very upset. So what was he going to do? So boil it saure. Rava was going to make Rav Avya's life halachically miserable. Now what does that mean? He wanted to ask him some questions that he wouldn't get the answer to, right? In order to distress him, just like he was distressing Rava. I don't know why he didn't just tell him, get your fashtunkin of shoes off my couch. He was annoyed, he was upset, so he was going to post him some questions that he would not be able to get the answer to. So Amar Leh, My time, Rabbi Rav Yosef to Amri Tarvaihu, Shraga de Nafta Nami Shari Letaltulei. So listen to what I say. So Rava asked Rav Avya the following question: why do Rabbi and Rav Yosef allow for the handling of a naphtha candle once it's extinguished? Right? Why do Rabbi and Rav Yosef allow for that? So we'll say, Amar Leh. So Rava responds and he says, Hoil v'chazi v'chasuye be'mana. So Rava says, no problem, that's an easy one, because it can be used as a bottle stopper. Right? You could use it to go ahead and cover a kli. So the Gemara says, so therefore, Rava responds back and he says, Ela me'ata, if you're going to use that logic, and we'll say, we actually spoke about this last week, this is a slippery slope. So Rava says, if that's true, you should be able to pick up a stone, any stone you want, and it shouldn't be muktzah. Why? Because you can always use a stone for what? And a bottle stopper. Right? Well, so this is the famous paperweight shayla, right? So you could always use it as a paperweight. So then no item should ever be muktzah. So the Gemara says, Amrli Rav Avya responded, no. Ha ika toras kli aleh. Hani leka toras kli aleh. To which the Gemara says, no, there's a fundamental distinction. The naphtha kli, the naphtha ner, right, the naphtha ner has the status of a kli. The rock sitting in the yard doesn't have the status of a kli. So because it already has the status of a kli, as long as you could find another permitted Shabbos kli usage for it, it won't be muktzah. But the rock itself, which doesn't even have the status of a kli, by definition is going to be muktzah. After all, Rabbi responds, Milo Tanya, have we not learned Amud Beis? Hashiraim. Hashiraim. Or Vashirim. Hashirayim. V'hanizomim v'atabos. So Rashi Shirayim are etzdos, are bracelets. So bracelets, nizomim are nose rings. Tabaos are rings. Hari hein kechol hakelim hanitalim b'chatzar. These are like all other utensils which may be carried in the courtyard. And I will say, what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. Top line, hari hein kechol hakelim. So here's what's interesting. We're going to discuss this, that there are certain ornaments or certain types of jewelry that a woman is not permitted to go into the Rosh Hashanah with on Shabbos. This is in the absence of an Eruv. Why? Because there are certain forms of jewelry that a woman would often take off to show to her friends. So there's a concern that if she walks out with them on Shabbos, that what's going to happen? She's going to take them off, she may end up carrying it. So it's interesting, says the Mishnah, is like this, that Gzeiro Dilma Shilfa, I'm reading Rashi, Dilma Shilfa Umechya Mihu Torres Kli Alein Umutzla Tantlan Shloki Derech Malbush. So here's what's interesting. So the Gemara says like this, that these types of jewelry that you would not be permitted to go ahead and wear out into the Rosh Hashanah, a woman would be permitted to carry them around her house or around her chatzah. Or in other words, they're not muktza. That even though you can't wear them out into the Shusarabim, they're not muktza. Why are they not muktza? Because they're called a kli. Because they have the designation of a kli. So Rav Avia says to Rava, you see from here that if an item has a kli, as long as it has some type of permitted usage or some type of permitted purpose, you can move it. Therefore, the naftaner, at least according to Rava and Rav Yosef, once the nair goes out, since it's already called a kli, if you find another permitted kli usage for it, in this case being a bottle stopper, right, a cover for a kli, you're permitted to move it on Shabbos. But the tsroros, the pebbles in the yard, which don't even have the status of a kli, cannot be moved on Shabbos. So the Gemara says the following: But Amar Ula Matam, why can a woman go ahead and move the pieces of jewelry, let's say around her house, around her chutz, on Shabbos? Hoil v'ika Torah kli ala, because they're called the kli. Hachanami, so to over here by the nafta ner. Hoil v'ika Torah kli ala, since it has the designation of a kli, therefore one will be permitted to go ahead and move it on Shabbos. Suppose to listen to how the story ends. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Baruch Rachmana, Delo Kasife Rava L'Rav Avia. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak said, Baruch Hashem, right, that God spared Rava from being humiliated. Right, that here again, this was a shtickle setup, right, this was a shtickle setup, in order to go ahead and, I'm sorry, not Rava, Rav Avia, excuse me, that Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, saved Rav Avia from being humiliated by Rava. Okay, so the Gemara says the following. Rami le Abaye le Rava. Tanya, so Abaye posed the following question to Rava. Tanya, Moser Hashem and Sheben Ever Shebekara Oser. The leftover oil that's in a ner or that's in a kara, right? The leftover oil that's in, remember, I'll say one more time, ner always refers to the receptacle in which you put the oil and the wick. So the leftover oil that's in the ner or in a kara or in a bowl, you filled up a bowl with oil, is usr. One is not permitted to go ahead and get any benefits from it. Now the assumption I will say behind that is what? That halacha lemaisa, once it's been set aside for kindling purposes, even once the fire goes out, the remaining oil is still muktzah.
We're talking about after Shabbat.
No, this is not Shabbos. After Shabbos, it's totally permitted. Right, this is, you kindled it before Shabbos, now it goes out on Shabbos, so the Braisa says that you're not permitted to get any benefits from the leftover oil. The Rabbi Shimon Matir. But Rabbi Shimon allows it. Now, I'm going to say, this is Rabbi Shimon Lashitaso. Because Rabbi Shimon Amma, the Rabbi Shimon Lesle Muktza. The Gemara always uses this very broad statement, but of course, because Rabbi Shimon holds of a very loose definition of Muktza. In other words, Rabbi Shimon only holds that the only time the Nair is Muktza is when it's lit. But once it extinguishes, then by definition, it's no longer Muktza. Fine. That's not new to us. That's been Rabbi Shimon for the last three blot. Or many. But the Gemara is, I'm sorry. Four blocks. Baruch Hashem. I will always take those corrections. Baruch Hashem, that's good. Or minhu. I think 4.5 actually. Or minhu. So the Gemara raises a contradiction. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kol She'ein Mumo Nikr. So we'll say, listen to this. Now the Gemara is going to pose a contradiction from what would appear to be initially a totally left field. So the Gemara deal says like this. Kol She'ein Mumo Nikr Me'erev Yom Tov. If you have a situation where the mum was not recognizable on Erev Yom Tov. Now what are we talking about over here? Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Mumo Nikr Gabi Bechor Koi. Now we'll say, we know The halacha is like this: that if you have an animal that a firstborn animal, that is the property of the kohen. However, again, if the animal is blemished, then the animal essentially loses its kedusha. It loses its bechor status. So let's see, you have the following situation. You have kol she'ein mumo nikar me'erev yom tov. Let's say you have an animal, but the mum was not nikar on erev yom tov. The mum. Now, we'll see, you have to appreciate something. So in order to go ahead, you know, you can't just decide, if the owner of the animal can't just decide, oh, that looks like a mum. Right? Obviously, you need a system to declare the animal blemished. Otherwise, every single farmer is going to go ahead and say that his animal is blemished. So let's say the mum wasn't nikar on erev yom tov. So we'll call it was an undiagnosed mum. On Erev Yom Tov. And what happens? So now let's say it becomes clear on Yom Tov that in fact the animal does have a mum. Still, you're not permitted to shecht that animal on Shabbos, on Yom Tov. Why? Because, and I remember, we switched to Yom Tov now for a little bit. So on Yom Tov, you're permitted to shecht an animal. But nevertheless, the Gemara says over here that if the mum was not recognizable on Erev Yom Tov, the animal is not considered to be prepared for Yom Tov use, and therefore you may not shecht it on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, so Rabbi, what do you see from there? What do you see from here? This seems to be a contradiction. Because again, what we're saying over here is that since the animal was not permitted for use before Yom Tov, then what? It's not usable on Yom Tov. Now this would seem to contradict Rabbi Shimon's position. Because according to Rabbi Shimon, the only time that the mukta status is in effect is when we'll call it the isser, right? When the activity is actually going on, when the ner is actually kindled. But once the fire is gone, it is mukta is no longer there. Using that same logic, we would assume that according to Rabbi Shimon, what? That halacha lemaisa, if the mum becomes nikar on Yom Tov, then what? You should be permitted to go and shech the animal on Yom Tov. To which the Gemara says, no, that's not a good comparison. Why? Hach yashto, is that really a good comparison? Hasam, Adam Yoshev Umetzapa e Masai Tech Benero. So Rabbi said, you know what Rabbi Shimon's logic is in the case of the Nair? There's one thing you know for sure about your Nair, and that's what? It's going to go out. You know for sure that's going to happen. So because of that, when you light that Nair on Erev Shabbos, Rabbi Shimon holds that you have Das, you know that Nair is going to go out, and chances are you also know that what? There's going to be leftover oil. So a person already knows mitchil is going to be leftover. And a person has das to begin with to use that oil. There's an expectation, meaning the circumstances are going to unfold in a particularly defined fashion. And because of that, you have that das that when that nair goes out, you're going to get benefits from the oil. However, ha-ha, but in the case of the Bechor, Adam Yoshevu Metzabe Masa Yipo Bomum. Does a person wait by his animal wondering when the animal is going to become blemished? Not Meimar Amar Mi Yemar Denefal Bay Muma. First of all, who says the animal is ever going to become blemished? Vim Tim Salomar Denefal Bay Muma. And even if it turns out that the animal becomes blemished, Mi Yemar Denefal Bay Mum Kavua. Right? Who says that it's going to be what? A Mum Kavua. Well, so remember, there's something called a Mum Kavua and a Mum Over. A mum over means the type of mum that a person is going to be healed from. So mum over does not disqualify an animal for being a bechor. We just wait for the animal to heal. A mum kavua means a mum that's not going away. So first of all, who says it's going to be a mum? And if there is a mum, who says it's going to be a mum kavua? Then it's not enough of a mum kavua. And even if you say that what? That it's going to be a mum kavua, mi yemar dinizdaki klei chacham. Who says that the chacham is going to have a chance to go ahead and look at it? Rashi says sheyimtza chacham sheyimtza sheyizakik lo biyom tov liros im mum kavua hulo. So even if it is a mum kavua, you can't declare that on your own. You need a chacham, talmud chacham, to go ahead and declare that. Who says you're going to find a talmud chacham that's willing to make a house call to you on Yom Tov? So because you have all of these variables, therefore what? The animal is essentially set aside for non-use on Yom Tov. The Gemara says is therefore the case of the Bechor does not pose a contradiction to Rabbi Shimon. Because even Rabbi Shimon normally allows you to go ahead and use the muktzah item. Once the muktzah event has finished, that's only when there's a muktzah event where there's an expectation that the muktzah event is going to come to an end. But if there's no reasonable expectation, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that the item is set aside for non-use. So the Gemara raises another question. The Gemara says, Masiv Rabbi Chama. Rabbi Chama brings a contradiction. Mafirin nidarim b'Shabbos. We can annul vows on Shabbos. And you could ask, remember, Hafara and She'ila just refers to the two different processes of annulling vows. We don't have to get into that right now. But you're permitted to go ahead and annul vows that have a Shabbos ramification. Shabbos ramification. Now, I will say, Rashi just points out over here, Mafir Nedarm is Bali Ishto. We're dafka talking about over here the idea that when a woman, when a wife makes a neder, her husband has the ability to annul that particular neder. So if a wife makes a neder, a husband has the ability to annul that neder, even on Shabbos, for Nedarim that have Shabbos ramifications. What would be an example of a neder that has Shabbos ramifications? Rashi says, "Shenazar Shabbos ki go neder shlo yochal hayom." For example, a woman says, "I'm taking a neder. I'm not going to eat today." So obviously, has a Shabbos ramification. So a husband is permitted to annul that vow on Shabbos. So the Gemara says like this: "Va'amai lema miyemar demizdakek lebal." So we'll say this question is actually fascinating. So the Gemara wants to say like this. When a woman makes a neder, right, the neder essentially makes something prohibited to her, which essentially what? Makes the item mukta. Makes the item mukta. The only way the item becomes unmukta is how? Is if the husband is mefer the neder. It doesn't mefer the neder. So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, even if the husband is mefer the neder, why should the item become unmukta? I'm coining that term, unmukta, right? Mi yemar dimizdakik lebal. Who says that the husband's going to annul it? Look at Rashi. Mi yemar dimizdakik va'amai muteres lecho va'afilu shari lebal. Why should she be permitted to eat the food, even if the husband permits the neder? Lissar la mishul mukta. The food should be mukta to her. Why? Da ascha daita va'amra mi yemar dimizdakik lebal. Should this not be comparable to the case of the Bechor? Because, you see, also, in the case of the neder, there's one thing you know for sure, which is what? It's going to go out, right? So therefore, the expectation is going to go out, and therefore, you can use the leftover oil. But in this case over here, when she makes the neder, who says that the Baal is going to go ahead and annul it? And therefore, it should be like the case of the Bechor. Therefore, if there's no expectation that the husband will annul it, it's the mukta, the food should remain mukta to her, even in the event that what? That the husband doesn't annul the vow.
Why is the food
I'm sorry?
Why is the food mukta?
Because once she...
carry it for her husband, she would to her. The kids, she would...
Say that again.
He's saying the neder was personal.
So why? Right, that's interesting. Right, why should the neder? Meaning, unless of course, I'll tell you. Unless of course, maybe this is begging things, but unless of course, there are two different types of the dharma a person can make. A person could go ahead and say the hana of the food is on me, or a person could say konam alai ochal. Konam alai ochal means I can't have anything to do with food. Which maybe that's Bepasha, I guess that's what the Gemara is operating with. In which case, then it really would be mukta for her, even to handle food, not just to eat it.
She's also making the neder before Shabbos.
She's making the neder Bepashtos before Shabbos, and we don't really make nedarim on Shabbos. We don't make nedarim on Shabbos. Yeah, no, we don't make nedarim on Shabbos. Except Nidre Tzedakah. Nidre Tzedakah was the only exception. Yeah. Yeah, so Bepashtos, right, you'd want it before Shabbos because you had to be in a Shmoshos piece also. Bepashtos. So the Gemara says like this, Hasam kidrat Pinchas. So no, the Gemara and the Dharma are different. Why? Because there we always say Rapinchas, Mishmei Durava. Because what does Rapinchas say in the name of Rava? Dharma Rapinchas Shay Durava. Kal hanoderes al das bailehi noderes. The Gemara says, no. The Dharma of a wife by definition are different. Why? Because since a woman knows that her neder is subject to the revocation of her husband, whenever she makes a neder, she always knows that it's contingent on her husband. So because that, the Gemara wants to say, that is to a certain degree like the Ner case. Because since she knows that her husband is either going to have to approve or disapprove of this neder, her das is that if my husband upholds the neder, fine. But if he doesn't uphold the neder, I understand that he has that power of revocation. And therefore, if it turns out that he goes ahead and revokes the neder, therefore the food will not be mukta to her over the duration of Shabbos. Tashma, nish'olun l'nedarim shal tzorech ha-Shabbos b'Shabbos. So the Gemara says, you're permitted to go ahead. Now I will say, that case was definitely referring to a wife. Now, this is talking about a more general case, where let's say a person made a neder that has a Shabbos ramification. We can use the same case, where I make a neder not to eat on Shabbos. So I'm permitted to do she'ila. Now remember, she'ila, I will say, is accomplished by going to a chacham. I go to a chacham, and the chacham finds a Pesach. Right, the pass, right, he finds an opening. So, we're not going to give a whole shiur in the Dharam now. But the idea would be, let's say the Chacham says to me, you know, if you would have known this piece of information, would you have made the neder? And assuming I answer no, that's a pasach, creates an opening, and the neder is annulled. So nishalim nidarim shel tzorach haShabbos haShabbos. We could annul nidarim that have Shabbos ramifications on Shabbos. Va'amai. But why can we do that? Lema mi yemar dimizdaki klei chacham. So again, same idea. Since we're now dealing with a process that is dependent on someone else, namely, I need the chacham, who's to say that I'm going to be able to find the chacham on Shabbos? Take a look at Rashi. Chacham yemar vehejotos lomach lemishrei lebechar ella b'mum hayodu alachol kigam uchoser ever. So what's the Gemara says like this? So who's to say, I'm sorry, I read ahead. Who's to say that you're going to be able to go out and find the Chacham? So what's here what the kasha is? The kasha is like this. Let's say it turns out that the Chacham himself actually, I do find the Chacham, and he knows my neder. The Gemara is positing that maybe the food should still be muktza to me. Why? Because any time there's not necessarily an expectation that I will be able to change these circumstances, the item should remain muktza. Because again, going back to what we said before, the only time Rabbi Shimon allowed the leftover shemen was why? Because there's not just an expectation, that there is a reality, an indisputable reality. We don't bank on Hanukkah miracles, right? There's an indisputable reality that Nair is going to go out. If that Nair is going to go out, there's going to be leftover shemen. That shemen becomes permitted, says Rabbi Shimon. But in all of these other cases where there's not an expectation, even if it turns out that the neder was annulled, maybe the mukta status should still remain in effect. To which the Gemara says, Hasam, ilo mizdaki klei chacham, sagile begimel hadyotos. Hacha mi yemar dimizdaki klei chacham. So what's it? The Gemara says like this. You know, in the nether case, the interesting part is that even if you can't find a chacham, you have a failsafe. What's the failsafe? Like we do Erev Rosh Hashanah, right? You could always do hataras nedarim with gimel hadyotos, with three regular people. And Baruch Hashem, there's no shortage of regular people. Right? You can always get together three regular people to annul your particular vow. The reason why the case of Bechor is problematic is because Bechor cannot be accomplished through three regular people. Bechor can only be accomplished through Chacham. Romeli Abaye the Rabbi Yosef. So Abaye posed a question to Rabbi Yosef. Mi Amar Rab Shimon, Kavsa Mutzal Taltala, Kavsa In, Lo Kavsa Lo. So also remember, right now, Rabbi Shimon's position has been what? That you could move the Nair, but only once the Nair has been extinguished. But before the Nair has been extinguished, you may not move it. Now, what's the logic there? The assumption that the logic is because Rabbi Shimon is concerned that if we allow you to carry a kindled candle, what will happen? You may cause it to go out. It causes it to go out. So the Gemara says, one second. Hasham inalei the Rabbi Shimon da Amar davar shenom is kavid mutter. So both sides. So listen to this. Rabbi says, Rabbi Yosef. Well, let's call this worst case now. Let's say, in fact, you carry the candle while it's lit and it does go out. So you didn't have kavana for that act. That was davar shenom is kavid. You didn't have kavana for that act. And Rabbi Shimon is on record as saying what? Davar shenom is kavid. That if you perform a malacha without kavana, that's mutter. Right? Or if you perform an act, I shouldn't say that. If you perform an act that results in a malacha, but you did not have kavana for that malacha, then what? It's mutter. So therefore, using that logic, if we merge these two shitos, Rabbi Shimon should what? Should what? Allow you to carry even the kindled candle on Shabbos. What's the Gemara's example? It's this Sanya. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Gorer Adam Kisei Mita Vesafsal, Obilvad Shlo Yizkavin Lasos Choritz. So the classic example of this is, Rabbi Shimon allows you to drag a bench on Shabbos, even though what? Even though by dragging the bench, you will make a furrow. Now making a furrow is a malacha of Choresh, right? Of Choresh, of tilling the soil. But Rabbi Shimon holds that since that's not your kavana is not to go ahead and make the furrow, but your kavana is to move the bench from point A to point B, that's what? Therefore, dragging the bench is mutter. So therefore, using that logic, Rabbi Shimon should even allow you to move the candle even before the flame has been extinguished, because even worst case scenario, if it goes out, Rabbi Shimon holds that's malach davar shenom miskaven, and therefore it's mutter. To which the Gemara says, no. Kol heicha, dechi mechaven ika isura da oraisa, kilo mechaven gozer Rabbi Shimon de Rabbanon. V'kol heicha dechi mechaven ika, I'm sorry, let me read this one at a time. So the Gemara says like this. Any time, in any situation, Rabbi Shimon was like this. If you had kavana for the act, if it would have been a malacha d'oraisa, Rabbi Shimon holds that even in that case, it's asur midrabanan. kol heichal dechi mechavein ika isroi derabanan, ki lo mechavein shari Rabbi Shimon lechatchila. But in any case, where even if you have kavana for the act, at most it would be a derabanan, that's what Rabbi Shimon allows. So I will say, what does this mean? So why does Rabbi Shimon allow you to move the bench? Because I will say, let's say, you were the kavana, you were to take a bench, and you were to make a furrow in the ground. Is that a malacha d'oraisa derabanan? It's derabanan. Why? Because that's not a real act of charisha. A real act of charisha, first of all, is done with a plow, right? A real act of charisha is done in a particular, is done in rows. There are ways you do charisha. See, even if you took the bench l'chatchila and you purposely dragged in order to make a furrow in the ground, you've only violated a malacha d'rabbanan. So therefore, it's in those cases where you're only dealing with a malacha d'rabbanan, where Rabbi Shimon says, if it happens, as long as it's not your kavana, it's mutter. But in cases where the malacha that you're dealing with is a malacha d'oraisa, then even Rabbi Shimon agrees that what? You may not do it. So for example, if the ner were to go out, Rabbi will say, what is that? That's a malacha d'oraisa. If you were to intentionally put the ner out, that would be a malacha d'oraisa. Therefore, Rabbi Shimon holds that even to do it as a darshin in a miskavein is still going to be asim d'rabbanan. True, meaning if you were to pick up the candle and walk it from point A to point B, and they were to go out, you would not violate the Doraisa, you would violate only a Dirabanan. But since if you were to do it intentionally, you would violate a Doraisa, any case which if done intentionally would be in violation of a Doraisa, Rabbi Shimon holds is still awesome a Dirabanan, even unintentionally. But any case which if intentionally done would only result in a Dirabanan, Rabbi Shimon holds is mutter. So that's how Rabbi Shimon holds, even in this case over here by the Nair, yes, after it goes out, you're permitted to go ahead and carry it, but while it's lit, you may not carry it. A little bit weiter. So the Gemara says like this, massive Rava. So Rava raised a contradiction to this. Mochrei ksus, mochrin kedarkon, ubilvat shelo yiskavin becham me'achamo, ubegisham me'achamo. So what's the case here, we'll say? Mochrei ksus, we've actually had this quoted a number of different times. This is somebody who's selling clothing that has shakas. Selling clothing that has shatnez. I'm selling wares that has shatnez in it. I sell shatnez suits. So what happens? Mochrei ksus, so people who sell shatnez clothing, mochrin kedarkon, they could sell in their normal fashion. Now, what does that mean? So often the way that clothing salesmen sold their wares was how? They wore it, right? You would wear this, you like the cut, you like how this looks. You would wear the clothing as well as modeling it for the potential customer. So even if you're selling shatnez clothing, you're still permitted to go ahead and wear it. As long as what? Ubilvad shelo yiskavin becham nechamo, as long as you do not have kavana to get benefit from the clothing. Right? Whether it's to go ahead and shield you from the sun, or it's to shield you from the rain. So as long as you don't have in mind to get clothing benefits from this, but the only thing you're doing with it ultimately is wearing it to model, it's permitted. However, vatsnuin, but the modest ones, mafshilin b'makal acharein. But the modest ones, which means, the pious ones, would not wear the clothing. The pious ones would simply, literally what it means is they would put it on a stick, and they were on a hanger, and they'd carry around the clothing rack, and they would keep it hanging behind them. So the Gemara says, 1 second. V'ha ha'cha, d'chi mechavein isra d'oray si'ika, ki lo mechavein shari Rabbi Shimon l'chatchila. So what's that? So the Gemara says, but 1 second, how could this be? This is a case where if a person purposely intentionally put on the shat in his suit, for the sake of wearing it as clothing, what would happen? You'd be chayiv midoraisa, right? And yet what? We see over here that when you don't have kavana to wear it, it's permitted. This contradicts the concept that we just said before. We just said before that Rabbi Shimon's worldview, if you have a malacha that's a doraisa, even when it's a darshin miskavin, it's aser. It's aser. So using that logic over here, Rabbi Shimon should not allow for the clothing salesman to wear the shatnez clothing, even if they don't have kavana, to go and get benefit from it. Ela amarava, top of Mem Zayin, Rava says, no. Hanach l'ner shemen upsila. The truth is, ner, the oil and the wick, he just chooses, it is a different parasha. It's something totally different. Why, according to Rabbi Shimon, may you not go ahead and carry the ner? Carry the ner when it's lit. It has nothing to do with the reasons that we mentioned before. Rather, what is it? Mishhoil dina'ase basis l'dover ha'oser. The reason you can't carry the ner when it's actually kindled is because it becomes a basis. It becomes a base to a prohibited item. Take a look at Rashi. The davar ha'aser l'shalheves. When the fire is actually burning, so the ner itself becomes a base to the flame. The bechi hay mukta molde Rabbi Shimon shakli tafel l'shalheves ba'odabo velav mishum dechayish l'kviya. In reality, Rabbi Shimon is not worried about extinguishing. What is Rabbi Shimon worried about over here? Not worried. What is Rabbi Shimon's position over here? Rabbi Shimon holds that when the fire is kindled, the kli becomes a basis, a base. Now, what does that mean? Becomes a basis. It means it becomes tafel. It becomes secondary to the ish, almost as if when the ish is burning, the kli itself becomes part of the ish, and therefore carrying the kli is tantamount to carrying the ish. And even Rabbi Shimon subscribes to that level of muktzah. When it goes out, he holds that it's no longer muktzah. But when it's actually burning, he holds that entire thing, the ner, the ish, as well as the kli itself, have the status of ish, and therefore cannot be handled on Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon, this introduces us to a new idea of basis. Basis means a base. Little Rashi actually says basis, moshav. Moshav. So basis means, basis refers to the item that ultimately is supporting the muktzah. And what we'll see is that even according to Rabbi Shimon, who has a generally relaxed view regarding muktzah, the basis itself, while the muktzah item is vibrant, the basis itself takes on the identity and the properties of the actual muktzah item itself. Therefore, even Rabbi Shimon would hold that you may not transport a kli that is, a ner that is lit, not because we're afraid it's going to be extinguished, but rather because the kli itself has the status of the actual ner. All right, let's stop over here.
Does Rabbi Shimon hold that?